Now we're going to hear from Hugh McKay, not the social researcher, but a visiting scholar at the US Studies Center. He spoke about the political drama House of Cards, which follows the elaborate plans of Frank Underwood, played by Kevin Spacey, to gain power in Washington. If you haven't seen it, Underwood dispenses tidbits of ruthless advice straight to the camera throughout the show.
For those of us climbing to the top of the food chain, there can be no mercy. There is but one rule: hunt or be hunted.
In the second season of House of Cards, a plotline involving China emerges, which McKay, who's also an international economist, will discuss. And he begins by comparing bits of the script from House of Cards with lines from The Art of War by the 6th century BC military strategist Sun Tzu.
This is how we play the game. I am going to put a quotation on the screen. If you think it's from House of Cards, you put your hands on your head. If you think it's from The Art of War by Sun Tzu, put your hands on your hips, your tail. Let's begin. The first, proximity to power deludes some into thinking they wield it. Heads for House of Cards, tails for The Art of War. Okay, so the answer, of course, is House of Cards. So the second, one defends when his strength is inadequate. One attacks when it is abundant. Heads for House of Cards, Sun Tzu on the tail. Lots of tails, a few heads. It is the Grandmaster Sun Tzu. Another one, he who knows when he can fight and when he cannot will be victorious. Sun Tzu. Now, back to the game at hand. So the idea for this topic occurred to me as a merger of my own observations watching the show and an article entitled House of Cards and the Depiction of America's China. The article by Ben Coulson from the University of Newcastle, the British version. Now, he argued that House of Cards updated yellow peril anxiety for a rise of China world. He referenced an interview with the scriptwriter, Kenneth Lynn, who noted that House of Cards is an exploration of power at the highest levels. And today you can't tell that story without considering China. I certainly agree with that point. Coulson went on to cite Kurt Campbell, a very well-known US diplomat with links to this centre, and his take was that permeating the script is a nervous sense that China is on the rise and is here to stay. And I found that earlier this year, the Wall Street Journal took up the cudgel. And they wrote that not since counter-terrorism agent Jack Bauer stormed the Chinese consulate in the fourth season of 24, there has never been a major storyline about China featured in a mainstream US television series. The Journal notes that the show deserves kudos for the unusual authenticity. Plots straight from the headlines, cyber theft, currency manipulation, a trade dispute with rare earth minerals, escalating tensions in the East China Sea, all of these very, very topical global political and economic themes resonate through the show. And finally, and I can't quite tell if this is faint praise or they're actually trying to be nice, but they then say that it's rendered in the kind of detail that will ring mostly true to China watchers. And fascinatingly, Hong Kong's Phoenix Weekly has reported that a state council member, who also happens to be in charge of the omnipotent internal discipline division, which is running the corruption crackdown, frequently references House of Cards in meetings with party officials. Frequently. How can he do this? Why would he do this? Well, first of all, he has to assume quite a bit of knowledge on behalf of his listeners. And the fact that he can do that, and he can assume this knowledge from his colleagues, is that the second season of the show, where the Chinese storyline takes hold, is the very highest rating non-Chinese language political drama on Sohu, which is China's answer to Netflix, fifth highest overall, including Chinese language dramas. Now, all of the above speaks to a show with a very powerful allure. None of it speaks to accuracy or the veracity of the information which is being put out there. What does it actually tell us about US-China relations, about China itself, and about how America perceives China, and vice versa? So looking first at the key Chinese protagonist on the show, one Xander Feng, who is a billionaire princeling and a business partner of the other billionaire on the show, US presidential confidant Raymond Tusk. Now, the way that these two gentlemen are juxtaposed on the show is really quite stark. The American, Tusk, he's an everyman Midwesterner. Early on, when Mr. Tusk is introduced, making money seems secondary to his birdwatching hobby, and his ruthlessness only emerges with time. Xander Feng is a very, very different character. He's suave, he's young, he's cosmopolitan, he's an outright heathen. Now, the atmospherics around Feng are clearly quite well researched, if a little bit unwieldy, because the show has taken a number of caricatures of cosmopolitan Chinese, I would argue, and has put them all on one individual. Amidst all of this, he's trying to win a major infrastructure contract in the US, and he's back-channeling with the vice president and his staff to do so. Now, China's thirst for advanced technology has been an enormous factor in many aspects of their international engagement and in their industrial policies. Now, one of these has been the successful monopolization of the global trade in rare earth minerals. This comes up in the show. But how do the Chinese evolve these sorts of strategies? They say, great, well, we've got the raw material. We'd love to join you on the mainland in a joint venture. You bring your technology, we'll bring the raw materials. And that's how they get the technology on shore. That plays out extremely well in House of Cards. Chinese infrastructure firms actively seeking international contracts. Well, that's also a very well-established fact. The fact that it's happening in the northeast of the United States is somewhat unique. This is really something which is happening in developing countries principally, but it's not outside the boundaries. I do think that the Chinese will become very, very large funders of infrastructure in the advanced world, and so I see that storyline as a very credible one.
You're listening to The List on RN, and we're hearing from economist Hugh McKay about what the US political drama House of Cards can teach us about America's approach to diplomacy with China.
Beyond this, I think the show's actually on shakier ground, which does not mean that it is not instructive. It's very instructive. It tells us a lot about how America still sees the relationship with China. The US's belief that foreign pressure is a primary concern of the Chinese leadership runs very deep. The fact that it is not true has not dissuaded American foreign policy from developing this mythology. The Chinese are not driven by foreign pressure. They are driven by domestic imperatives. And this brings me to Hugh White's China Choice thesis. White tells us that most often people see it as shameful to put economic concerns first when issues of power and status are engaged. That's opinion. I don't actually agree with it, but Frank Underwood does. And Frank Underwood owns the evening from my point of view. The trade-off between money and power, in his mind, are very neatly encapsulated in the clip we're about to show, which will bring my presentation to a close. It's an admonishment that he issues to his former staffer, Remy, who has cashed out and taken a corner office on K Street rather than fighting the good fight internally.
Such a waste of talent. He chose money over power. In this town, a mistake nearly everyone makes. Money is the McMansion in Sarasota that starts falling apart after 10 years. Power is the old stone building that stands for centuries. I cannot respect someone who doesn't see the difference.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Hugh McKay, a visiting scholar at the US Studies Center, speaking about House of Cards at a forum held earlier this week.